Hi, I'm George Corliss.
Hi, folks. I'm Jillian Fenner.
And welcome to Good Growing with the Garden Gal. And folks, this program will help you to become stewards of your own natural resources, whether you're a farmer, a backyard gardener, or if you're into forestry or animal husbandry. Our goal is to provide information and education on these subjects and more. And today's topic, Jillian, is?
Designing your vegetable garden.
That sounds exciting.
Yes.
And especially, it seems like with less and less and less room a lot of times to actually put gardens in.
Well, and they keep saying you maybe don't need so much room to put gardens in.
Yeah, we're going to talk about today, and we're going to introduce the garden gal herself right now. It's Teresa Williams. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, George. Hi, Jillian.
Hi.
Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself before we get going here?
I love to garden. That's what I do when I'm not working for the conservation district. Is we have a very large vegetable garden. We've been growing. I've been gardening my whole life, but we've been growing here in Wexford County for 25 years now.
Wow! Now you say a very large vegetable garden. How is a very large vegetable garden?
It has been as large as 200 feet by 100 feet. Right now, we're probably cut that in half.
So about a half an acre at its at its greatest. What are some of the different crops that you plant?
I'm an A to Z gardener. Everything from asparagus to zucchini, anything that I can grow in a place that has a growing season like ours, which we have fairly late frosts for spring and fairly early frosts. And then I extend that a bit, too, and we'll talk about that later on today, with some different strategies where you can basically extend your growing season, keep those frosts away from your plants, get them a little extra warmth.
Now, Teresa, with our, I guess you could say, area that we broadcast to, we're in Lansing and Grand Rapids, and then we're all the way to the UP and actually into Sioux, Ontario. So how many different zones are actually in that gardening area?
Okay. I guess I'd like to clear up what a USDA hardiness zone is and what it isn't.
Sure.
A hardiness zone has to do with what is the coldest temperature you're going to experience during the winter, which has nothing to do with where your growing season is for tomatoes, because you're not trying to grow a tomato during the winter unless you're in a heated greenhouse situation. So there's this great tool called a growing degree days that is a measurement of how much heat you have during your growing season. And we're lucky in Michigan. There's something called the MSU Enviro Weather Station scattered all throughout the state. And you could put that term in a search engine, MSU Enviro Weather, and you could find data for someplace fairly close to where you're at. I know we've got stations in near Lake City in our area, and we can see just how much heat has accumulated during our season so far and what our average is. So we don't really have, if we were going to have them, I would say they would be heat zones, but we don't really have those. It has more to do with what's your growing season, how many days. And our frost-free growing season around here is right about 100 days.
But farther south, it
farther
could
south,
be longer.
Yes, it's going to be longer farther south. It's going to be shorter in the central part of the lower peninsula, far away from the lakes, and it's going to be shorter in the upper peninsula. Again, the further away you are from the lake, the shorter your growing season is going to be.
Okay. I've got some other questions to continue there, but let's start with a word of prayer before we get into this too much. Jillian?
Dear Heavenly Father, we always come to you thanking you that you love us so much. And we just thank you, Lord, that you've given us this earth where we can grow food for ourselves and for others. And we just pray that you would bless our efforts. And we are so thankful for Teresa to help us have more understanding and knowledge and able to grow food. We ask this in your name. Amen.
And once again, if you just tuned in, I'm George Corliss. That was Jillian Fenner. And this program is called Good Growing with a Garden Gal. And the garden gal herself is Teresa Williams. Teresa, what was the name of the zones that you called them, the heat index, or what was it?
Well, there's a average frost-free season is probably the best way to think about it if you're talking about summer growing of vegetables. And because we do have, people are very used to the USDA plant hardiness zones, but those are really only come into play when you're talking about a perennial crop that's going to be in the ground over the winter. It's not very useful for those zones aren't really useful for talking about how long of a growing season do you have in the summer, or how much heat do you have in the summer to grow our annual crops like beans and tomatoes and corn.
Now, let's say that somebody goes to Myers or Walmart or Home Depot or wherever and buys their plants or some of these other things that we're going to, you know, put in the ground to hopefully harvest. A lot of times on there's different tags. What are the zones that they're referring to on those tags most of the time? Do you know?
Those kinds of tags would only be on things like an apple tree, something that's going to be overwintered. And those would be the plant hardiness zones. I've not seen any zones like that on an annual plant, only on your perennial plants.
Okay. And is it important to look at the seed packet? Is there anything that can give us hints? Or like if you're purchasing, you know, like say a flat of tomato plants to transplant or anything like that, what do we need to be looking at on those plants for these? You say there's really not much there for us to be looking at as far as these zones and other things like that?
Not so much for zones, but on tomato plants, I was just looking at some in our local stores over the weekend. And for tomatoes, they'll usually say something like an early tomato. They don't often give a number, but they'll say early. On the other hand, if you like to start your own plants from seeds, if you go to a seed catalog, they often will give you days to maturity. Like you can find probably the earliest tomato days to maturity you're going to find is about a 55 day, ranging up to about an 80 or an 85 day maturity for tomatoes. Corn has similar kind of designations where it would tell you how many days till harvest. But keep in mind that those are averages because the amount of heat you would get, say, in Kalamazoo on a particular day in July might be very different from the amount of heat you're going to get in Ishpeming on that very same day. So those days to maturity are very helpful for variety comparisons, but they're not all that helpful for predicting when am I going to harvest it.
Now, folks, today we're going to be talking about designing vegetable gardens. And Teresa, before we get going here, let's talk a little bit about raised bed gardening.
Sure.
And just planting in rows, like it seems like everybody's been doing for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Is there an advantage of doing one over the other? Or what are your thoughts? Or do different gardeners have different preferences when it comes to that?
They do. And I'll talk about each, and then gardeners can decide which is best for them. The traditional garden in rows, those are great if you're going to use any kind of machinery to help you with tillage or with weeding, because they're designed so that if you have machinery, the machinery wheels can go down in between the rows. So if you're talking about something very large, that might work really well for you. If you're a gardener with a smaller garden, you might want to consider beds, raised or not, either way. And what the advantage of beds are is that you concentrate the foot traffic in about half as much space as you would if you were growing rows. So you've got more space where the plant roots can grow, where you're not walking on the soil and you're not compacting the soil. So the roots are able to do their job better, their job of gathering water, gathering nutrients. It's like if you think about having plants in beds, you're not stepping on their toes when you go into the garden, where if you have it in rows, you're more or less stepping on the plant's toes every time you walk down the row.
So there are some people that instead of doing the raised beds, they do the same thing. They just don't have the dirt piled up basically
right.
in a 6 or 8 or 10 inch.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you have sandy ground, drainage is not your problem, so you might not want a raised bed. You might want a bed, but you might not want to raise it at all because you're going to need those roots to be able to reach water. On the other hand, if your soil is heavier, has a lot of clay, going up can really be beneficial to the roots because then they can have more soil where the water zone isn't right up to the bottom of their roots, where they can be aerated a bit. So if you've got clay soil, I always tell folks, go up. If you have sandy soil, I say going up isn't for you. Stay down where you can be closer to the water.
Jelaine, what way have you guys done, you know, your vegetable gardens in the past? Have you
usually rows, but I have a house over by Lake Mitchell, and I have a little, probably 2 foot, yeah, maybe 3 foot by 8 foot little bed I made. just to try to keep it away from the grass because it was part of the front lawn. And the rabbits really liked it. Yeah. And so my carrots only got that big, though. I've done it for 2 years. And we put good manure on that dirt. It was nice. Came from the farm. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? So I don't know. They were just little tiny short things. And I
left
them.
You want me to answer that without seeing the soil? Yeah.
Maybe they're the baby carrots.
Yeah, well, they were smaller than baby carrots.
My first guess would be you had plenty of nutrients if you were using.
Yeah, it was manure.
And if it was really sandy ground, it may have been a water issue.
Oh.
You know, did they consistently have enough water? Because they need to be. The soil needs to be moist, not waterlogged, but moist all the time.
Okay,
while they're growing.
That might have been a problem. My lettuce was fine, but lettuce does pretty good, I think, growing anywhere, right, pretty much. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Isn't lettuce, I mean, lettuce is pretty easy.
Lettuce is pretty easy.
Yeah, so yeah. I didn't have a problem with lettuce.
Teresa, she's mentioning that she lives by in the summer next to Lake Mitchell. Do a lot of people use the seaweed as, you know, kind of a, what would you, on your
mulch.
Garden as a mulch?
I know close to the ocean they do because kelp has the ability to gather lots of micronutrients from the ocean water, and kelp is a very beneficial soil amendment. I haven't heard about it much in inland lakes, but I would think that as long as the lake isn't being treated with an herbicide, and sometimes they are because of Eurasian milfoil, those weeds from the lake are not going to have any seeds in them. So it's a mulch where you're not going to be spreading any weed seeds if you're using lake weeds that you've harvested.
I'll give you a little bit of insight, my understanding, because if you live around Lake Mitchell, we can bring our weeds and we can deposit it, like, you know, down in front of our house or something, and it can only be the weeds. It can't have any leaves. It can't have any sticks. And they've contracted with somebody that picks it up, and they take it, and that's my understanding. They're using it for gardening.
Huh.
I don't know where they're taking it and what they're doing to it, but that's why they don't want any leaves or any sticks, just the weeds that come out of the lake.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful because there's no weed seeds in that. Mm. That's going to go into your garden and create a weeding problem.
So, Teresa, let's start out at first design basics. So we need to lay out our garden.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, if you've only got a small space, you're dealing with that type of a situation. You probably don't want to plant in rows than if you've got a very small space if you're trying to plant any variety of plants, correct?
You'll get, well, your yield will be greater if you do beds rather than rows. So especially if you have a small space, you might be wanting to maximize how much you can harvest from that small space. So you will be able to get a greater yield out of a bed system than a row system.
Now, how do you go about picking these? I mean, let's say you've got lots of trees, or say you've got evergreens and other things like that. Do you stay away from them? What do you do?
Oh, like where on your land to
yes.
do it? Most vegetables like full sun. So that's the first thing to look for. Where is the sunniest part of your growing area? Start with that. And in terms of being away from trees, if you can think about how tall that tree is. Say it's a 30-foot tall tree. Ideally, if you've got the space, be twice that height away. So if it's a 30-foot tall tree, maybe be 60 feet away. Not everybody has that option. And so if you could keep it to no more than one tree height away, so that 30-foot tree, don't start your garden much closer than 30 feet from that tree.
And the reason for doing that is the shade, obviously.
The shade is part of it. Plus, the tree's roots are going to extend out. On a healthy tree, the roots are going to be twice as long as a tree is high. So if that tree is 30 foot high, it's probably sending its roots out 60 feet. So you've got the root competition as well as the shade. You know, you can still grow something. If that's your only choice, you still can grow something. But if you're going to look for the place to get your best results, go for twice the height of the tree.
So let's say that they don't have a choice. What are some good vegetables and other things to plant in a shady area?
Things that don't have seeds, like lettuce, spinach, kale, carrots even, or radishes. Some of our root crops will do okay in a slightly shady area. Our crops with seeds like tomatoes, cucumbers, melons, most of the time they want full sunlight. But our crops where we harvest the leaves, herbs are another good example. leaves can usually do fairly well in shade. Broccoli can take a little bit of shade.
Now, when you're saying shade or sun, how much? I mean, because you might not have full sun, but you have, you know, depending where the sun is in the sky. So how much shade is maybe too much?
When we talk about full sun, I like to think of there's 8 hours of a day in a summer when there's not shade on the area.
Okay.
Is that a good?
Yeah, that's, benefit? You know, yeah.
And then obviously sunlight is very important, but water sources are also important. Can you explain about that?
Sure. Your growing crops like to have the soil slightly moist all the time, if possible. Sometimes you can do that, sometimes you can't, and you have to make choices. But when you're laying out your garden, think about, how am I going to water this, and what's the best watering system? Am I very limited on my water resources? So something like a trickle or a drip irrigation system that uses the least amount of water, that's going to be good. And if you're going to use that, that can be a little challenging with beds because those are straight lines. So you really have to plan, where are my plants going to go if I'm going to use a trickle or a drip irrigation system. There's also different kinds of sprinklers where you've got much more flexibility with. We've got both oscillating sprinklers, which are the ones where you think about a fan moving back and forth. That's an oscillating sprinkler, and they're generally going to water an area that's rectangular. Impulse sprinklers are the ones that go ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. We've all heard that sound, so I think you know what I mean. They'll water in a circle, and they're the most dependable of all the irrigation systems. They're least likely to break down. So, but, you know, they're watering a circle, not a rectangle, and most folks have to think about, well, what else is going to be watered besides my garden if I've got a circular irrigation pattern?
How much water should an average garden get every day or every week or every month?
That's a really challenging question because it depends both on the crop and what the weather's been. If you think about a small seedling, it doesn't have a lot of leaf area. It's not moving a lot of water through the plant. Where if you think about a large, big, bushy tomato plant, that's moving a lot of water through the plant every day. So how big is your plant? How much leaf surface area do you have? What is the water holding capacity of your soil? Sandy soils, they're going to need water more frequently than does a clay soil. And the other thing is, how hot has it been? How sunny has it been? And how windy has it been? Because those things all are a huge factor. So, you know, you hear a lot about an inch of water a week, but those variables make it so that an inch could be too much or an inch could be too little. What I like to do is say, stick your finger down in the soil, down to say your second knuckle. And if the soil is moist at an inch or 2 inches down, you're good. Except for when you're germinating seeds, because then you need soil moisture right at the soil surface. But stick your finger in the soil several times a week. And then when you water, again, you know, let the water go for an hour, 2, 3 hours, and check the soil. How far down has that moisture gone? In our particular gardening situation, I know that I need to irrigate for 4 hours to get the water down where I want it to be. That's just the condition in where I grow. It might be a different answer for somebody else in a different area with a different crop. That's why you really got to get down in there, get your finger in the soil, and feel it. What's it feel like? If it's slightly moist, you're good to go.
And probably not. I'm sorry, Jillian.
Well, I was just going to say, and is there a better time to water than another time of the day?
The main thing to avoid is wind, because wind will make it so that your crops don't get very much of the water at all. So avoid wind if you can. It's good to water in the morning if you can, because it gives the plants a chance to dry out to avoid fungal diseases. I say that, but then I also know in Michigan, most nights we have a heavy covering of dew. So I don't know if, since we have dew almost every night in Michigan, if really it's a problem to water at night at all.
Okay, I just wonder, because some people say it's best to water in the morning, and shouldn't water during the middle of the day. And I'm like, well, does it really make a difference?
If you look at a commercial farm, when do they water? They're watering all day. I think that a plant has water is more important than the time of day.
Okay.
Well, it's time for our first break, but stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Good Growing with the Garden Gal.